Yakshibash. My name is Borat. This is my country of Kazakhstan. It's nice. My hobbies, ping pong, disco dance, and sunbathe. This is my house, entry place. This is where I live. My bed. This is a VCR recorded. And these are play cassettes. Now I show you outside from my houses. Tishy. This is Natalia. She is my sister. She is number 4 prostitute in all of Kazakhstan.
Hello, and welcome back to the Tools of Ignorance podcast. It is Wednesday, February 27th, around 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Hudson is now joining me on the line. How are you doing today, Hudson?
I'm swell-tastic, Jonah. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a snowy day here in Ottawa. We've had we didn't anticipate this kind of snow, and it's something that's quite reminiscent of something that you might expect in December. So I'm pretty much locked in, so I'm ready to talk about baseball.
Yeah. So yeah, that's actually an interesting thing that you said. So yeah, today it snowed in Ithaca, New York, and it was just a generally crappy day because it started as rain, then it became freezing rain, and then it became snow. But yesterday, I snuck down to the baseball field and caught a Cornell baseball practice and just chilled for a while, and it was about 30 or 40 degrees maybe outside, and then today it was snowing. So that's my baseball life right now.
Yeah, this snow is almost unseasonable considering it's March in 2 days, and it's most unwelcome. And spring training's underway, and you know there are signs of spring's imminent arrival that are titillating us, and then the snow comes and has to crap all over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, truth.
But anyways, we continue on with our season preview series, and today we'll be looking at the Colorado Rockies. Before we do that, let us just remind you that we'd love to answer your questions, any baseball-related, non-baseball-related questions on the podcast. So fire those over to toolsofignorance11@gmail.com. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter, follow Hudson at Hudson Belinsky, and you can follow myself at Jonah8264. So the Colorado Rockies are a team that struggled mightily in 2012, finishing with a record of 64 wins and 98 losses, good for fifth place in the NL West. They had to deal with a rash of injuries to some of their primary contributors, notably shortstop Troy Tulowitzki. Jorge De La Rosa was out with recovering from Tommy John surgery. Todd Helton missed an extended period of time with a hip injury. So Hudson, what are some of your initial impressions about this club heading into 2013?
It's not a very good club. I'm not sure I'm very confident in the process that this club has right now. There are definitely some people in place to make this team compete. When you look at Tulowitzki, if he can stay healthy, at Cargo, Fowler's a guy, Will and Rosario is definitely a guy too. The rotation is very, very weak. You could argue that it's amongst the worst in baseball. There are a bunch of guys here who are kind of stopgap guys. I think this is a team that's not terrible. Maybe it was unfair of me to call it the worst rotation or one of the worst rotations in baseball, but this is a team that I think right now is built to win 70, 75 games. That would be an optimistic look at this team. You hope for that their sake that Troy Tulowitzki can be healthy and that some players can kind of play up a little bit who have kind of disappointed in these past couple seasons. There's really not a whole lot to be excited about. It's kind of, I would expect another rough year. But, you know, they did have a pretty good draft last year, I would say. And so maybe the system is on the rise a little bit. they're, you know, it isn't a terrible minor league system. It's just not a great minor league system. And when you look at teams who are struggling at the big league level, you'd like to see that there's some progress and that there are some promising young stars or at least solid contributors who are going to be close and kind of a wealth of that. And that's not really the case, at least in my opinion. But there are some guys who are lower down, you could see having big jumps. And it's just an okay system for me. It's not a great system. Maybe somewhere in the between the 12th and 18th best systems in baseball. But, you know, so the overall look at the team, it's not a very good team. It's not a great minor league system. And so what is that? And then when we talk about the rest of the division, I just don't see it happening for them this year. I think this is another team like the others we've gone through that needs to look to continue to rebuild and retool themselves for the future.
Absolutely. And looking at their prospects outside of perhaps Nolan Arenado, as you mentioned, most of them haven't played above or even at the AA level. Most of them are still a number of years away from reaching the big leagues. And it's going to be a rough immediate future for the Rockies. And I mean, you mentioned their pitching staff and how it leaves a little bit or a lot to be desired. And then, you know, I think you felt bad about labeling it as perhaps one of the worst in baseball. But, you know, I happen to think that it is. And, of course, the Rockies' offensive numbers are always going to be inflated playing in Coors Field. And, you know, they routinely have among some of the higher offensive rate stats in the league. But looking at their pitching rotation, that's, of course, one of the areas where they struggle. And one of the things you notice about last year's club is that this is a rotation that is not really going to strike a whole lot of guys out. Last year, their pitching staff averaged 7.24 Ks per nine, which was 22nd in the league. And when you consider that in conjunction with the fact that Colorado was the worst team at turning balls in play into outs with the lowest defensive efficiency rating in the league, it can get ugly. And it certainly did in Colorado last year. And like you said, you know, they are a team that needs to look to rebuild. With only a few core major league pieces who are probably going to factor into their future, being Cargo, probably Fowler, and of course Troy Tulowitzki if he can find a way to stay healthy. But yeah, it's going to be tough, and they are a number of years away. And looking at their team going forward, they didn't make, and rightfully, they there was nobody on the market that they were going to sign that was going to help them contend in the near future. And, you know, Rockies fans are just going to have to sort of bite the bullet and bear with it for what could be a rough couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One player that I'm excited to watch in 2013 there is Willian Rosario, a guy whose numbers were obviously, you know, he's playing half of his games in Coors Field in Extreme Hitters Park. But he hit 28 home runs last year, 270, 312, 530 line. And, you know, there were definitely flaws in his offensive game. Ton of strikeouts. Well, not a ton, but a lot. And then, you know, he isn't drawing a ton of walks. He doesn't really, he's not an on-base guy. But I think he has the tools to become an on-base guy. I think he has the tools to become a significantly better hitter in terms of average. And you, when you look at the power will shine through that average. And I think he's an exciting young player for me, at least going into his age 24 season now. And you know, he's a guy who can kind of step up and join that current group. He's not solidified or anything yet, but you know, He's a guy. Another guy there is Michael Kadire. And Kadire, nobody's going to remember for him for last season. He's known as kind of, he's a twin. They brought him in last year, which was, I thought it made him a pretty compelling fantasy option going to Coors Field from a pretty close to neutral park, I would say. In Target Field, we don't really have enough information yet, but I would say that it's pretty close to neutral in Minnesota. But you know, even switching from American League to National League and then switching to the most extreme hitter's park, I thought he would be a guy who could kind of take off, and he actually declined quite a bit. And so maybe he bounces back. Maybe he stays healthy for the whole season. He's a guy who can, you can see that happening too. He might be a guy who they can trade in a couple of months, sort of like the guys we talked about with the Astros and the Cubs, who they could kind of flip into prospects in July or towards the end of the year. But, you know, there are a couple of guys like that on every team at the bottom here. But you know, we'll see. We'll see. There's not a ton to be optimistic about, but there are a couple pieces that are nice.
Yep. And speaking to those pieces, Drew Pomeranz, of course, is an intriguing guy in the rotation, of course, with an impressive pedigree. He came over from Cleveland in that Jimenez trade, and he hasn't really impressed so far in his two seasons, season and a bit at the major league level. And this is a guy who ascended through the minor leagues very, very quickly. In 2011, he covered high A and double A before seeing his first time at AAA in 2012 and then ultimately getting promoted to the bigs. But over his 30 minor league appearances, which encompassed 151 and two-thirds of an inning, he had an ERA under 2, and he was striking out more than 10 batters per 9 innings, which is sensational. And obviously, pitching in Coors Field half the time is going to wreak havoc on a pitcher's numbers. It's interesting. His splits are a little bit weird because for his career, he actually has fared better at home at Coors Field than on the road, which is a little bit surprising.
Interesting.
Unless I'm reading that wrong, which is totally possible. I think he's lost a little bit of his luster, considering this is a guy who was, you know, at one point the top prospect in the Rockies organization. But, you know, of the guys that they have slated into their rotation right now, he represents probably the best option to be a long-term guy who they could probably rely on. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Rockies fans will gravitate towards Pomeranz, considering the supporting cast that surrounds him in the rotation. And, you know, he'll look to build on a year wherein he didn't have a whole lot of success. But, you know, that was consistent with the team's performance overall. So, you know, that's a bright spot in the rotation and one of the few bright spots in a roster that is not particularly compelling.
Yeah. Pomeranz is definitely an interesting guy. Now, the other thing to note about these guys, when we're looking at these pitchers, last year they had that odd four-man rotation thing going for a while. And it didn't work, but you know, I guess if you're going to try something like that, you know, that's the situation you try it in. But, my understanding of Fangraphs WAR is that, innings per start is, heavily factored into that. I don't know about heavily, but it plays a factor. And so when we're talking about, a guy in Drew Pomeranz, who was worth 1.0 WAR last year, then, you know, that's something to keep in mind. Another thing is that WAR kind of, or FIP, or dips in general, ignore our pitchers who pitch with an approach that is going to affect the outcome of the pitch. For example, Jack Moore wrote an article about Edinson Volquez not too long ago, looking at his use of the sinker in Petco Park, where the Padres play, versus his use of, or was it the sinker, or was it the two-seamer versus the four-seamer? I think that was it. But basically, this is a guy who was pretty clearly pitching to his ballpark. And making decisions about which fastball he'd throw based on the ballpark, trying to keep, and I think I got it backwards or something, but, you know, the point still stands is that pitchers craft their games to where they're playing nowadays. So, you know, if there is some backward split with Pomeranz, then that would make sense. And I guess if he's pitching to try to keep the ball down and generate more ground balls in Coors Field rather than letting the ball fly.
Well, it's weird because for his career, he's about a run and a half better at home than on the road. He has an ERA of 5.77 and 13 career starts on the road, which is pretty terrible. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you look at the rates at which fly balls soar out of Coors Field. 13.7% of fly balls went for home runs at Coors Field last season, which was the second highest rate in the big league, second only to the Blue Jays playing out of Rogers Center. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, you would think that that would factor into the Rockies' drafting approach, and they would probably look to stockpile sinker ballers, you know, heavy fastball guys who induce a ton of ground balls. You know, last year they were pretty much middle of the pack in terms of their pitching staff's ability to induce ground balls. But, you know, you would think that it would certainly behoove them to pursue those kind of pitchers.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not sure we've seen, I mean, I could be wrong, but we haven't really seen them bring in like any intense ground ball pitchers. Anybody who's too far above normal, which is probably the wrong way to put it, but you know what I'm saying. They haven't brought in Joe Blanton. They haven't brought in. I can't even think of who the ground ball pitchers are, but they haven't brought
Trevor Cahill, Jake Westbrook.
Yeah, exactly. They haven't done. Brought in a guy like that, so which is interesting because I would think that often guys like that are thought to be are less thought of as commodities than the heavy strikeout throw or the strikeout guys who you know maybe they have a few more fly balls, but it seems like heavy ground ball rates and good defense up the middle, which when healthy Tulo is great, you know, those types of things could help this team be really good. And, you know, I think that you can craft a team to a ballpark, definitely. And when you have such an extreme situation in Coors Field, the ballpark is everything. And the ballpark, as much as it can hurt you, it can be a weapon that you can use, and you can take advantage of that and make your team based on that.
Well, yeah, and you spoke of Tulo's exceptional defense. And the crazy thing about Tulowitzki is that he's missed so many games over the past three seasons. I mean, last year he only played in 47 contests. In 2010, he missed 40 games as well. And yet he's still the leader in wins above replacement per Fangraphs calculation over the past three seasons among shortstops, which speaks to how incredibly valuable he is when he's healthy. But, I mean, there are injury concerns. And, you know, for a number of seasons now, he hasn't been able to stay on the field for an entire season. He hasn't played more than 143 games since 2009. Colorado's, I'm sure they have no delusions of contending this year, but, you know, he's a guy who's going to need to stay in the lineup on a regular basis as he gets older and as this team does get closer to contention as those prospects continue to develop. Again, he's still young and Cargo is still young, so the core of that team, you know, I believe they're both 26, so they still have some pretty bright years ahead of them. But, you know, he's going to have to find a way to stay healthy on a regular basis, or it could be big trouble.
Yeah, especially with the contract situation. But, you know, lately what I've thought about a little bit is guys who have bad contracts that maybe don't live up to them, or maybe they were just pretty clearly paid too much to begin with. Those contracts are becoming unloadable much more. It seems much more often. Maybe I'm just looking at a couple of deals and making that assumption. But we saw the Dodgers eat those Red Sox contracts. Not really eat them, but they took on those contracts. They absorbed them. Yeah. And the Jays taking on Reyes and Burley and Heath Bell being taken on by the the Diamondbacks. I mean, those are just a few different examples, but it seems like when you have a guy who's an up-the-middle player like Troy Tulowitzki, say he comes back and maybe he's just only a 4-WAR player for the next couple of years, and then that's kind of becomes what he is, then there's still trade value there. But I can't even, I guess that's so premature of me to say that, because he could come back this year. And he did play 143 games in 2011, and he was worth 6 Fangraphs WAR that year. So we'll see. I don't know if I would call it a guy who's chronically injured just yet, but if he can't stay healthy this year, then it would really start to worry me. But yeah, he's a guy to pay close attention to in 2013, because it's a big year for him.
Definitely. And I think that the benchmark should be, if the Blue Jays can unload Vernon Wells' contract, really any contract is, no contract can be too cumbersome if someone's prepared to take on Vernon Wells' contract. And with Tulowitzki, yeah, you said it. Probably premature to label him, chronically injured, but, he's an elite talent at a premium position, premium defensive position. And when he's healthy, he is, among the best, if not the best shortstop in baseball.
Absolutely.
Pecota puts them at, I believe it's 72 wins for 2013. Good for, again, last place in the NL West. Unless you have anything else to add or parting thoughts, I think we can move past the Rockies.
Let's move past the Rockies.
All right. I'm over them.
I'm over it.
So Zach Greinke, with an interesting soundbite this week, where he pretty much admitted that the determining factor in his decision to sign with the Dodgers was economics. Mm-hmm. My initial impression was I loved the refreshing honesty. I think that quite often athletes, as they're counseled and advised to do, they'll prevaricate and they'll say, it was a better situation for whatever reason, when really we know that the underlying impetus to go to a particular team was financial. And I don't know. Zach Greinke's always been a little bit eccentric, but in this situation, I totally appreciated his honesty, and I thought that it was quite refreshing to hear from a professional athlete.
I can get on that train. I can see why you're on that train. I think it would be one thing if he signed with the Cubs, or if he signed with the Rockies or the Astros, and then he was was signing with a team that's not looking like they're going to be competitive in the short term. Then I'd kind of be more bothered by it. I understand that these guys are out for the top dollar, and that makes sense. And I do appreciate the honesty. It's interesting to me that that's even said, when it seems so easy to just be like, hey, it's a great situation here, because it is a pretty good situation. They have a lot of talented players. It's an organization that's investing a lot of money in the on-field talent. And so it is a good situation to be in. And then the whole thing with going back to Texas and seeing if he could milk any more money out of them, that's a different concept of it, a different aspect of it. But, bottom line, he ended up with a great team that paid him a lot of money. I take no issue with what happened.
Fair enough. Russell Martin withdraws from the World Baseball Classic because Team Canada was uncomfortable with his desire to play shortstop, as was his new ball club, the Pittsburgh Pirates. As a Canadian, I am upset. First of all, I'm upset for a number of reasons. One, I don't understand. Well, I understand, but I don't think that you can reasonably put the onus on Team Canada to say, to entrust a career catcher who spent you know, one season at third base years ago, I think it was in 04, 05, to allow him to play shortstop. And then, you know, it was frustrating to me. It's a totally outlandish request. For a backstop to be like, oh, I want to play middle infield in this premier international tournament.
Yeah, it's very selfish thing to do. Because basically, what I get out of it is I want to show people that I can play shortstop, and then I'm a really athletic dude. And Russell Martin is a name that you should know because he's a really athletic guy. Oh, and he's a catcher. But he could play shortstop if you needed him to. That kind of thing is what I get out of it. And it seems to be a very selfish thing, especially when, like, maybe if it was something that they had agreed upon when he signed up to play for the team, and then they told him, no, we want you a catcher. But, like, you're a catcher. That's why you're on the team, because you're a pretty good catcher. And so it just seems it's totally ridiculous. I agree.
And now Canada's lineup takes a significant hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still quite a bit of major league talent. You know, Joey Votto, Justin Morneau, Michael Saunders, Adam Loewen. You know, so there's major league talent on that lineup. But without Russell Martin, he was probably going to figure to be a big bat in the middle of their lineup. Probably, you know, maybe hit fifth behind Votto and Morneau. But yeah, it's frustrating. It's a totally ridiculous request. And it's a shame for fans of Canadian baseball who are, you know, at least entertaining the idea of Canada being competitive this year with, you know, another established major leaguer in Brett Laurie going to play for them. You know, that's going to be very exciting. It's a shame. And I think that his Canadian teammates, you know, they're frustrated too. Adam Loewen came out and said that, you know, I mean, I think that they're reluctant to call him out because he is an accomplished major leaguer and because, you know, they don't want to step on any toes. But, you know, I'm sure it's frustrating for them. It's frustrating for fans of Canadian baseball. And you know what? It's frustrating for people who want to see the World Baseball Classic raised to that level that perhaps, you know, international baseball fans and tournament organizers want it to be. They want it to be the premier international competition. And, you know, when guys withdraw for reasons like, oh, they can't play heinously out of position, like a catcher playing shortstop, you know, it's frustrating for them. Because, you know, to me it suggests that, you know, Russell Martin probably isn't taking it too seriously, trying to operate out of his natural position. So, yeah, it's disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. And so, who replaces him?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that like the fact that you don't have an answer immediately is sad.
I want to say, yeah. I'm the name is escaping me right now. Yeah, they don't have you know, sort of a go-to guy who's waiting in the wings.
John Swomey is on the roster and Chris Robinson. Chris Robinson's probably.
That's it. Chris Robinson.
Which, yeah, that's not really an asset.
It's not Russell Martin.
No. And not that Russell Martin's like a star or anything, but you know,
by Canadian baseball standards, he's a star.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He's a star.
That's interesting. But a couple of other interesting names just looking at this roster. Tyson Gillies is a guy who I would be excited about. I'm not sure how much. I mean, I guess he'll play a good deal. He probably has a chance. I don't know how the roster works out or what's been put out about the roster, but Gillies is a guy who I've seen and I've written about a good deal.
I remember watching Gillies in the qualifying round. Yeah. And, you know, he impressed. I seem to recall he had a home run, maybe even off a left-hander, which I was very impressed about. And he had a great year at Reading. You can, you know, give the scouting report, but, you know, he hit over 300 with a 369 OBP and an 822 OPS at Double-A this year. So, you know.
Yeah. So one of the things I worked on this offseason was this little book / magazine thing put out by Lindy Sports, and it was kind of it's a Phillies top prospects thing, and so I did a good deal of research on the Phillies, and well, the guys, when people saw Gillies, they loved him. He's great in center field. There's speed, there's some power there. He's a guy who could be really good. The issue with him has been staying on the field over the last couple of years, and whether that's injury or suspension, it's different. It's been a couple of different reasons, but he's a guy who could be fun to watch. But they also do have Loewen and Saunders and Rene Tassoni, who's a guy. This is a roster of guys who are pretty solid big leaguers. One interesting name on the roster that sticks out to me is Jameson Taillon, who is kind of an interesting story. One of his parents is Canadian.
I think his dad's from Calgary.
Yeah,
which is in Alberta.
But yeah, he was raised by a Canadian, so I'm not sure if he played hockey. And he's missing his teeth, and he says a boot and stuff. But but yeah, he's a guy who's obviously really good. But he grew up in Texas and played at a very good baseball school in Southeast Texas. But he's a Woodlands. Guy, the Woodlands, yeah. And so he's a guy who could be really, really good. Another Phillies prospect, Philippe Amont, is a guy who has a freaking nasty splitter and uses that with like an upper 90s fastball. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Philippe Amont became a closer in the big leagues for a good amount of time. But I mean, he doesn't really command so well, so we'll see.
I think that the biggest regret as a Canadian baseball fan is that Oscar Tavares is not going to suit up for Canada. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's probably the number two prospect in baseball right now and Jason Parks, who's the prospect guru at Baseball Prospectus. I love the way he described his swing, which is equal parts violence and beauty. Mm-hmm. Cause what he's done with the stick, through the minor leagues has been pretty sensational. For his career, that's 327 minor league games. He has an OPS over 900. And the sky's the limit for this outfielder. Who figures to hit in the middle of the lineup for the Cardinals for years to come. I can't remember exactly what his tie is to Canada. I know that he has a Canadian passport. Perhaps one of his parents is Canadian?
I believe he was originally born in the Dominican Republic. And then when he was young, his family moved to Canada, and sort of his formative years, he spent living in Canada. But I guess I'm not sure. He must have gone back to the DR because he's not a draft guy. He was an international signee, but he did spend a few years of his life in Canada, I believe. And so that's his tie to Canada.
That's a shame.
What's that?
That's a shame. It would have been really fun to watch him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I might get to see him in a couple weeks. I'm hoping to hit Cardinals camp when I do Florida spring training in about 3 weeks. So, yeah. So, Jonah, unless there's anything you would like to discuss, if you want to talk about just your general handsomeness, your very good vocabulary, things that are going on in your life.
I don't know. No words.
None words, you mean?
None words. Yeah, and the handsomeness, we've discussed that ad nauseum.
Yeah, both very handsome guys. I have a little bit of a little beard going.
I'm rocking the stash now, right now. I've actually gotten quite a bit of flack for it. I'm a man of principle, of conviction, so I'm feeling the stash right now, and I'm going to rock it.
Yeah, I had that going for a little while, and then it just started to annoy me, and so I got rid of it.
But it is annoying. I feel it. It feels like it's alive and it has a mind of its own.
Uh-huh. And then you have the hair gets long and then it kind of goes into your onto your lip, and that's just
that's exactly what it's doing right now.
It's fun for no one. Yeah.
Well said.
Okay, so a couple final notes here. Again, Twitter at Jonah8264. That's me. That's me, not him. And then Jonah is at Hudson Belinsky. If you want, you can email the show at toolsofignorance11@gmail.com. Jonah, any final words for our listeners?
No.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with more show tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Great success.